turning your modest strengths into towering strengths. 2. Top off a strength. As Zenger and Folkman and many others have found, leaders with a small number of strengths are viewed more highly than leaders who have a broad base of capabilities. Of the 5 disciplines, identify your strongest area and then build a deep and broad repertoire of practices that allows you to excel at this discipline. Become a world-class challenger or a resounding talent magnet. Invest your energy wisely and progress from good to great by topping off one of your strengths. Working the extremes by paying attention to your highs and lows while ignoring the middle offers an efficient and sustainable pathway to leadership development. The strategies just mentioned can become more pinpointed through a rigorous multi-rater assessment. In addition to working the extremes, you can also accelerate your development by adopting the assumptions of a multiplier. Accelerator 2. Start with the assumptions. To score a strike in 10-pin bowling, you need to hit the head pin. Hitting the head pin directly will knock down most of the pins behind it. Hitting it in just the right place, on the left or right side, allows the bowler to knock down all the pins in a single strike. The assumptions of a multiplier are the head pin to becoming one. Because behavior follows assumptions, you can knock out a whole set of behaviors by adopting the right belief. Consider the following scenario and how you might approach it with either a diminisher or multiplier assumption. You are about to start your weekly one-on-one with your marketing manager, Jayanthi Gupta. Another executive has asked that you appoint someone from your division as a representative on a cross-divisional task force that will assess the company's competitive position and recommend changes to the current marketing programs. You decide to put Jayanthi on the task force and plan to use this one-on-one meeting to tee up this assignment. From a diminisher assumption, how would you approach this meeting if you assume, people will never figure this out without me? How would you define Jayanthi's role? What role would you take? How would you explain the assignment? How would you monitor progress? With this assumption, you would probably use Jayanthi as your representative, your eyes and ears into this project. She would attend the meetings, gather information, and then report back so you can weigh in on the issues. You would probably explain the assignment by telling her that she is representing you and how important it is that she not give anyone the wrong impression about what is happening in your division. What is the result of this approach? Jayanthi spends a lot of time attending meetings, but contributes very little to the task force. She is careful to not overstep her role, so she passes up opportunities to speak out and steers clear of any controversial issues where she might be called on to influence a decision. You provide input at a couple junctions, but most of the important decisions happen live, during the meetings. At the conclusion of the task force, you find that several decisions were made that are not in the best interest of your division. And you hear through the grapevine that the task force leader commented about the lack of engagement from your division. From a multiplier assumption, how would you approach this differently if you believed people are smart and can figure it out? You would be clear that you chose Jayanthi for her understanding of the market and her ability to assimilate the vast amounts of market data that the task force is assembling. You would let her know that she was representing the entire division and that she was fully responsible for implementing the task force's outcomes. You might recommend she come to meetings armed with data so she can weigh in on the issues and think on her feet during the debates. You would let her know that this task force is her project, but that you are available as a sounding board if she wants to jointly think through the issues. What are the results of this approach? Jayanthi engages fully in the task force, gains new understanding of the competitive landscape, and advocates for marketing programs that will have immediate benefit for your division. She impresses the task force leader, who thinks, this group has great talent. The assumptions we hold shape our views, our practices, and in the end have a powerful effect on the outcomes, often forming a self-fulfilling prophecy. One aspiring multiplier told us that the moment he started shifting his assumptions, he could see new opportunities everywhere. Instead of feeling overwhelmed that he was a bottleneck and frustrated that he had to redo other people's work, he started asking, "How can I improve the situation without putting myself at the center?" If you want to apply multiplier skills and behaviors naturally and instinctively, try on the multiplier assumptions and see how they guide your actions. The following summarizes some of the key assumptions of diminishers and multipliers that provide this starting point. Discipline, talent magnet. Diminisher assumption. People need to report to me in order to get them to do anything. Multiplier assumption. If I can find someone's genius, I can put them to work. Discipline, liberator. Diminisher assumption. Pressure increases performance. Multiplier assumption. People's best thinking must be given, not taken. Discipline, challenger. Diminisher assumption. I need to have all the answers. Multiplier assumption. People get smarter by being challenged. Discipline, debate maker. Diminisher assumption. There are only a few people worth listening to. Multiplier assumption. With enough minds, we can figure it out. Discipline, investor. Diminisher assumption. People will never be able to figure it out without me. Multiplier assumption. People are smart and will figure things out. Accelerator 3. Take a 30-day multiplier challenge. The most effective and enduring learning involves small, successive experimentation with new approaches. When these small experiments produce successful outcomes, the resulting energy fuels the next, slightly bigger experiment. Over time, these experiments form new patterns of behavior that establish a new baseline. One technique to catalyze this cycle of experimentation is to take a 30-day multiplier challenge and focus your efforts on a single discipline for 30 days. Why 30 days? Research shows that it takes approximately 30 days of concentrated effort to form a new habit. Like any good researcher, you should record your experiences in a journal, learning from what works and what doesn't. Here's a glimpse into what happened when 5 different leaders, and in some cases their management team, took the 30-day challenge. We've highlighted one for each of the 5 disciplines, and we've changed several names. Labeling talent. Jack Bossidy was the team leader in a manufacturing plant. He could see some members of his team dominated meetings while others withdrew. Curiously, the one person who spoke most in the meetings was the one person who felt most underutilized and undervalued. Jack decided to take a 30-day challenge and began by genius watching. He took note of the native genius of each member of his team. In his next staff meeting, he spoke of each person, why they were needed on the team, and the unique capabilities they brought. He went beyond labeling each person's genius one-on-one and labeled it in front of the whole group. The team then reviewed the work that needed to get done over the next quarter and determined assignments. Although not explicitly asked of them, the team naturally ensured each person had an assignment that demanded one or more of his or her unique capabilities. What do you suppose happened to the undervalued but overly dominating team member? He actually talked less, listened more, and began to draw out the capabilities of the others. Under the leadership of an aspiring multiplier, he went from dominating to multiplying. He told Jack, "It feels like we are really working as a team now." Liberating Lokesh. Christine faced a common management challenge, how to get the most out of a smart but timid colleague. Lokesh always showed deference to other people's ideas. Instead of offering his own opinion, he would just go with what other people recommended. It gave the impression that he didn't have any ideas. Christine found that it was easy to dominate meetings with Lokesh. Without meaning to, she would end up overexpressing her views and speaking 80% of the time. The more she tried to rescue him, the worse things seemed to be. The more she mentored Lokesh, the less he seemed to contribute. Christine took the 30-day challenge and focused on being a liberator to Lokesh by making more space for him. She began by asking, "How is Lokesh smart?" The question snapped her out of her more judgmental diminisher assumptions and put her on a safari. As his abilities came into focus for her, his years of experience and his ability to break complex activities into actionable plans, she found it easier to ask him questions and to give him space to answer them. Christine noticed an immediate change. Lokesh started to offer opinions. He spoke 50% or more in their interactions. He volunteered for the majority of the action items. He stepped into the role of a creator. And within days, one of the clients had commented to Christine about the difference. Christine summarized her learning by saying, "The silence creates the space. The space creates results. The results are valuable. And I have already seen a payoff." Challenging students. Meredith Byrne was in her second year of teaching high school. The class was a specialized topic, which meant four grade levels were in the same class. She was overwhelmed with the enormous range of abilities in her class. One student was taking exams 2 years ahead of schedule, while another was 2 years behind, and there was no foreseeable way to reduce her class size. Meredith took the 30-day challenge. As she put on her multiplier glasses, she suddenly saw how underutilized many of her students were. She selected her top all-around student, Brian, and asked him to assume the role of student leader for the class. She confessed that the role was new and did not yet have clear goals. She seeded some ideas for goals and extended a concrete challenge to him: define and fulfill this role in a way that next semester the class would continue the tradition. Brian went from being a solid student to being an active leader in the class. He selected several other students to work with him, and together they organized academic competitions between their class and other classes in the district, all on their own time. When Meredith asked Brian how fully he was being engaged, he said that he probably went from 60 to 110%. That's an almost 2 times increase from the person who was already a high-performing student. And he increased the engagement of the rest of the class in the process. Debate in Dodgeville. Roughly every 6 months, the Inventory Management Division at Land's End, based in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, would get an urgent request from the executive management team for a new approach to forecasting. When this request comes in, the senior inventory managers typically lock themselves in a room and find a Band-Aid tool that satisfies the immediate request. Inevitably, the Band-Aid comes loose, and those people uninvolved and underutilized in the decision-making process were then overworked trying to force the plan to work. But this time, it was different. The entire inventory management team had just signed up for the 30-day challenge and selected the debate-maker discipline for their work. This time, when the urgent request came from senior management, the group prepared for a thorough debate to find a sustainable solution. They brought in senior planners and the IT group, who usually had to scramble after the fact, who could give practical input to the feasibility of any suggested solution. They framed the issues and set ground rules for debate, including no barriers to the thinking. The team challenged their assumptions and in the end developed a means of in-season forecasting that served the new demands. The solution they arrived at started as a wild idea, but with input from IT, it became a plausible reality. Investing in renewable energy. Gregory Powell is a thoughtful and intense MIT graduate with an MBA from Harvard who works as a manager in an alternative energy startup. Gregory is known for his ability to solve complex problems. As a reviewer of the early versions of this book, he admitted to feeling torn between his growing desire to lead like a multiplier and the mounting pressures he faced at work. He found a way through his dilemma by taking on the 30-day challenge with a clear and focused target in mind. Gregory had recently hired Michael, a talented individual with rich experience as an employee of the Brazilian embassy, but wasn't fully utilizing him. Michael was the only team member working remotely and was often out of sight, out of mind. Michael estimated he was being utilized at the 20 to 25% mark. Gregory began the challenge by making a few simple investments. He gave Michael full ownership for capturing their Brazilian partnership strategy on paper for a critical board meeting. He then integrated Michael virtually into company-wide meetings so his ideas could be heard. He touched base with him often, but didn't take over his work. Within just a couple of weeks, Michael said he felt like he was being utilized at 75 to 80%. This represents a threefold utilization gain. Yet the real gain, according to Gregory, came from a slight change in perspective. once he started looking at the people around him through the lens of a multiplier, he said that opportunities started presenting themselves. Instead of feeling frustrated at having to step in and redo work, he found ways to help other people take their thinking to the next level. He could take charge without taking over. He began to do things differently because he began to see his role differently. Greg McEwen and I have been inspired as we have witnessed senior leaders and frontline managers taking the 30-day challenge. It has been interesting to read their journals as they documented their struggles and successes. In many cases, these leaders have been generously willing to publish their experiences here and online at www.multipliersbook.com. Here you can check out their stories, download tools to take the 30-day challenge yourself, and share your success. Join the community of leaders taking the Multiplier Challenge. Sustaining Momentum. Taking a 30-day challenge will put you on the multiplier path and will produce initial traction and momentum, but it takes more than a quick win to truly become a multiplier. Sustaining the momentum takes repetition, time, and reinforcement. 1. Build it layer by layer. I remember exactly where I was the first time I heard Bolero, the classical music composition by Maurice Ravel. Its stark simplicity and powerful conclusion made a lasting impression on me. The piece, which Ravel himself described as containing almost no music, is an exploration of repetition and crescendo. It consists of a simple two-part melody repeated 18 times over the course of 15 minutes. In each repetition, a new instrument is added as the orchestra plays with increased energy, growing more insistent and louder. It opens simply with two flutes. Then in comes a bassoon. Then another layer is added with a clarinet, and then an oboe, and next a trumpet. Soon there are strings, woodwinds, and brass to vary the texture of the music. With each new layer of instruments, momentum and energy build. The piece, which began softly with only the sound of a flute, culminates as the entire orchestra sounds the simple theme and ends with a booming crescendo as the last of the 4,037 drum beats is heard. Mastery of skills like those of the multiplier is developed in much the same way that Bolero unfolds, a layer at a time, building on a simple tune. A leader begins with a simple assumption and a singular idea, that people are smart and the job of the leader is to draw out the intelligence of others. With this simple idea, leaders might begin by restraining themselves more and listening to others. Then they might start asking more questions. They become skilled in the art of asking the right questions and begin posing the most difficult questions that can challenge the underlying assumptions of the organization. They then use these questions to seed and establish challenges for the organization. Next, they bring this sense of challenge and inquiry into key decisions and become masterful debate makers. Like the instruments in Bolero, by adding these skills a layer at a time, they achieve mastery and have a powerful effect on others. Becoming a multiplier is achieved with a single idea, repeated over and over, while new skills are introduced and orchestrated into a leadership gestalt. 2. Stay with it for a year. Momentum can be built quickly. Mastery takes time. In his book, Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell introduces the 10,000-hour rule, citing the research of Anders Ericsson and others that claims that the development of expertise or greatness is a function of practice and time, about 10,000 hours of practice, to be exact. While true mastery indeed develops over years of regular practice, a foundation or baseline of capability can be established in 1 year of consistent, purposeful effort. An insightful colleague, Dinesh Chandra, once observed that the best work is done when one can hold a single question for a long time. Dinesh is known for asking, "What is the question that you are asking yourself this year?" Each year, he carries with him a question that challenges his thinking and sparks learning. Inspired by Dinesh a couple of years ago, I adopted an intriguing question for myself. How is what I know getting in the way of what I don't know? By simply asking this question, I was compelled to venture beyond the realm of my own understanding. Holding this question for a year, actually I'm still working on it, and asking it in numerous settings has helped me transcend the limitations of my own knowledge and find ways to better see and access the intelligence of others. In the spirit of the multiplier, one might adopt an annual question such as, what would cause other people to become smarter and more capable around me? What could people figure out on their own if I just gave them more space? How can I get the full brain power of my team or organization? Or simply, how can I multiply the intelligence of others? Asking these questions once or twice is interesting. Continuing to ask them again and again during the course of a year or longer creates deep learning and builds the hours of practice necessary to achieve mastery. 3. Build a community. When three friends decided they all wanted to earn a black belt in judo, they enthusiastically signed up for the challenge together and agreed to rotate driving each other to the gym. But as the week-in and week-out training relentlessly continued, their motivation waned. Despite the pull to quit, all three continued with their training, reaching black belt status together. Their explanation was simple. Each week, at least one person didn't feel like going, but no one wanted to let the others down. Positive peer pressure is a powerful way to sustain momentum in any endeavor. It is, in its own right, a lazy way idea for becoming a multiplier. The most successful participants of the 30-day challenge have worked collectively or have had a partner who served as both a sounding board and accountability point. Experiment with the power of community in your own organization as a way to spark and sustain momentum. You might start small by finding a couple of colleagues or friends who read this book and want to take the challenge. You might then create an online learning community. Or you may choose to join a community of leaders around the world who aspire to lead like a multiplier. I have often wondered what type of online community a team of multipliers would create. How would they make it safe for people to share their best thinking and their boldest ideas? How would challenges get established, and how would debate happen? How would this community attract and develop talent and share ownership? By joining forces with a community, you need not have all the answers, or even all the questions. You can look to the genius of the group to guide you. The Multiplier Effect Revisited. When Greg and I teach the multiplier ideas to teams and organizations, we often ask the question, does any of this matter? How does leading like a multiplier matter to you, to your organization, or even to the world at large? Let us consider each in turn. First, it matters to you because people will give you more. The research showed consistently that even high-performing people gave multipliers 2 times more than they gave their diminisher counterparts. People don't give a little more, they give a lot more. They give all of their discretionary effort and mental energy. They dig deep and access reserves of brain power that they alone know exist. They apply the full measure of their intelligence. They reason more clearly, comprehend more completely, and learn more quickly. In the process, they get smarter and more capable. Your people will give you more, and in return, they get a richly satisfying experience. Exhausting but exhilarating captures what people continually told us what it was like to work for a multiplier. One woman said, "It was exhausting, but I was always ready to do it again. It is not a burnout experience, it is a build-up experience." As you become more of a multiplier, people will flock to you because you will be the boss to work for. You will become a talent magnet, drawing in and developing talent while providing extraordinary returns to the company as well as to the individuals who work for you. Second, it matters to the organization you work for. Many organizations face the double whammy of new challenges and insufficient resources. Perhaps you can relate to one startup that experienced years of extraordinary growth. Their strategy had been to throw people at the problem. But as their growth declined, they had to try to outperform their market without adding headcount. Suddenly, resource leverage was as strategically important as resource allocation. A leader in a Fortune 500 company recently shared with us that in one particular division, 1 in 3 of his people was utilized below the 20% level. Organizations led by multipliers can more than double the capability of their people and hence their organizations. This is a particularly timely message. In down markets and times of scarcity, managers must find ways to get more capability and productivity from their current resources. Corporations and organizations need managers who can migrate from the logic of addition, where more resources are required to handle the increased demands, to a logic of multiplication, where leaders can more fully extract the capability of their current resources. Resource leverage has the power of relevancy. It is timely, but it is also timeless. It is timeless because even in times of abundance and growth, companies need leaders who can multiply the intelligence and capability of their colleagues and increase the brain power of the organization to meet its growth demands. In down markets or growth markets, leading like a multiplier matters to the organization you work for. Third, leading like a multiplier matters to the world at large. Albert Einstein is credited with saying, "The significant problems we face cannot be solved at the same level of thinking we were at when we created them." But what if we could access twice as much of the available intelligence and channel it to the perennial problems we face? What solutions could we generate if we could access the underutilized brain power in the world? Surely we need leaders who can extract and utilize all available intelligence to solve our most complex and vital challenges. Leading like a multiplier matters to the world at large. Genius or genius maker? When Philippe Petit illegally connected a tightrope wire between the 1,368-foot Twin Towers in New York City, he still had the chance to change his mind. The moment of truth came later, when he stood with one foot still on the building and another on the wire in front of him. The wire was bouncing up and down from the airflow between the buildings. His weight was still on his back leg. Recall once more how Petit described that critical moment as he stood on the edge overlooking the chasm. He reflected, "I had to make a decision of shifting my weight from one foot anchored to the building to the foot anchored on the wire. Something I could not resist called me out on that cable." He shifted his weight and took the first step. At the conclusion of this book, you may feel like Petit, with one foot anchored to the building of the status quo and the other anchored to the wire of change. You can remove your foot from the wire, lean back, and continue to lead the way you have in the past. Or you can shift your weight onto the wire and lead more like a multiplier. Inertia will keep you on the building where it is comfortable and safe. But for many of us, there is also a force pulling us out onto the wire and to a more impactful and fulfilling way of leading others. Will you shift your weight? Consider some of the multipliers who have made it across. Entrepreneurs Thomas and Andreas Strungman, who built billions of dollars of value in their company on their ability to find and develop the natural genius in others. History teacher Patrick Kelly, who creates an environment that draws out his students' very best thinking and work, and whose 98% of students score at the proficient or advanced levels on state tests. Nobel laureate Wangari Maathai, who started small by planting 7 seedling trees, but eventually created an irresistible challenge that resulted in 40 million trees being planted across Africa. Activist Ela Bhatt, SEWA founder and now member of the esteemed group The Elders, established by Nelson Mandela, who built up leaders to fully own and guide organizations she began. Leading like a multiplier is a choice we encounter daily, or perhaps in every moment. What choices are you making? And how will these choices affect what the people around you become? Is it possible that the choice you make about how you lead can impact not just your team, or even your immediate sphere of influence, but generations to come? A single accidental diminisher turned multiplier could have a profound and far-reaching impact in a world where the challenges are so great and our full intelligence underutilized. It seems possible that there are diminisher assumptions holding whole businesses back. What could happen if one aspiring multiplier introduced people around them to these ideas? What would happen if an organization currently operating on 50% of its intelligence moved to the 100% level? When accidental diminishers become multipliers, they are like Sir Galahad, whose strength was as the strength of 10. This is because multipliers are the key to everyone else's intelligence. A multiplier is the key to unlocking capability. A single multiplier matters. It is plausible that diminisher assumptions are underlying failing schools. What would transpire at a school if one principal learned to lead like a multiplier and found a way to give teachers, parents, and students greater ownership for the success of the school? What if these students and teachers learned these principles together? What would happen to families if parents led like multipliers in their homes? Many governments are suffocating, even collapsing. Is it possible for our civic leaders to seed challenges and then turn to the community for answers? Could answers to our most vexing challenges be found through rigorous debate and the extraction of the full intelligence of the community? Could diminishing leaders be replaced by those who serve as true multipliers, inspiring collective intelligence and capability on a mass scale? I believe that the diminishing cultures we see in organizations, schools, and even families are not inevitable. Indeed, in the last analysis, diminishing cultures may simply be unsustainable. To the extent that these cultures are based on incorrect assumptions, they will violate the truth about how people work and thrive. Like many historical empires, they will eventually collapse. It may be that the only institutions that will be left standing in turbulent times are those that harvest the abundance of intelligence available to them and operate on correct assumptions. We began this inquiry with an intriguing observation about two political leaders, paraphrased by Bono, the rock star and global activist. He said, "It has been said that after meeting with the great British Prime Minister William Ewart Gladstone, you left feeling he was the smartest person in the world. But after meeting with his rival Benjamin Disraeli, you left thinking you were the smartest person." The observation captures the essence and the power of a multiplier. Which will you be, a genius or a genius maker? Perhaps you stand with one foot on the building and the other on the wire. The choice matters. Chapter 7, Summary. Becoming a Multiplier. The Lazy Way Strategy. Use the right principles and tools and attain maximum results with just the right amount of effort. The Accelerators. 1. Work the extremes. Assess your leadership practices and then focus your development on the two extremes. 1. Bring up your lowest low, and 2. Take your highest high to the next level. 2. Start with the assumptions. Adopt the assumptions of a multiplier and allow the behavior and practices to naturally follow. If I can find someone's genius, I can put them to work. People's best thinking must be given, not taken. People get smarter by being challenged. With enough minds, we can figure it out. People are smart and will figure things out. 3. Take a 30-day multiplier challenge. Pick one practice within one discipline and work it for 30 days. Sustaining momentum. 1. Build it layer by layer. 2. Stay with it for a year. 3. Build a community. Appendix A, the research process. In this appendix, you will find a detailed account of the research Greg and I conducted to study the difference between diminishers and multipliers. We will outline the research process in three phases. 1, the foundation work for the research. 2, the research itself. And 3, the development of the multiplier model. Phase 1, the foundation. Research team. While Greg and I were the primary members of the research team, C.K. Prahalad served as an important informal research advisor. While many people contributed to the research in the book, our core was as follows. Liz Weissman, Master of Organizational Behavior, Marriott School of Management, Brigham Young University. Greg McEwen, Master of Business Administration, Stanford Graduate School of Business. C.K. Prahalad, Paul and Ruth McCracken Distinguished University Professor of Corporate Strategy at the Ross School of Business of the University of Michigan. Research question. Through an iterative process, we refined our research questions as, what are the vital few differences between intelligence diminishers and intelligence multipliers, and what impact do they have on organizations? Inherent in this question was the idea of contrast. We reasoned that it wasn't enough to study multipliers. As Jim Collins has explained, if you only studied gold medalists at the Olympics, you might erroneously conclude that they won because they all had coaches. It is only contrasting winners with the people who lost that you realize everyone has a coach, so having a coach cannot be the active ingredient in winning. We were looking for the active ingredients or differentiating factors. Definition of key terms. To be able to answer our research question, we defined our three key terms: diminisher, multiplier, and intelligence. Diminisher. A person who led an organization or management team that operated in silos, found it hard to get things done, and despite having smart people, seemed to not be able to do what it needed to do to reach its goals. Multiplier. A person who led an organization or management team that was able to understand and solve hard problems rapidly, achieve its goals, and adapt and increase its capacity over time. Intelligence. In our literature review, we found a paper that identified more than 70 definitions of intelligence. One paper that was important to us throughout the research process was signed by 52 researchers in 1994. They agreed that intelligence was the ability to reason, plan, solve problems, think abstractly, comprehend complex ideas, learn quickly, and learn from experience. It is not narrow. It is a broader and deeper capability for comprehending our surroundings, catching on, making sense of things, or figuring out what to do. Beyond this, we included the ability to adapt to new environments, learn new skills, and accomplish difficult tasks. Industry selection. Having first observed the diminisher multiplier phenomenon at Oracle, a software company, we opted to research the phenomenon in other companies within the broader technology industry. These companies included Affymetrix, biotech, Amazon, online retailing, Apple, consumer electronics, Cisco, networking and communications, Google, internet search, Intel, microprocessors, Microsoft, computer software, SAP, enterprise software applications. Phase 2. The research. Nominators. Instead of trying to identify diminishers and multipliers ourselves, we found people who would nominate these leaders for us. We used two criteria in the selection of our nominators. The first was that they should be successful professionals. It was important that these individuals had positive career experiences to draw from. We reasoned that interviewing people who had an axe to grind could skew the data. The second criteria was that these nominators have approximately 10 years management experience themselves. We wanted practical insight from people who had grappled with challenges of leading others. It is worth noting that nominators at many of the above companies pointed us to both multipliers and diminishers they had worked with at entirely different companies and often industries. Researcher-administered survey. We asked the nominators to rate the multipliers and diminishers they had identified on a 5-point scale against 48 leadership practices. We designed the list to be comprehensive, drawing upon standard competency models, popular leadership frameworks, and practices we hypothesized would differentiate diminishers from multipliers. The survey included skills, e.g., focuses on the customer, demonstrates intellectual curiosity, develops the talent of the team and business acumen, and mindsets, e.g., see their role as a primary thought leader and see intelligence as continually developing. We collected the results of this survey and analyzed the data in several ways. We looked for the largest deltas between multipliers and diminishers, the top skills and mindsets of multipliers, and the skills most correlated with the top mindsets of multipliers and diminishers. Structured interviews. In the original interviews with the nominators, we followed a structured format. we use the same questions in the same order to minimize context effects, or at least hold them constant, so we could ensure reliable aggregation and comparison of the answers we received across different interviews and time frames. All the interviews were conducted between October 2007 and October 2009, with the first round of interviews transpiring in 2007. The interviews averaged between 60 and 90 minutes and were conducted in person or by telephone. We kept written transcripts of all the conversations so we would have a permanent record of quotations and examples. While we followed a structured format, we allowed ourselves some latitude in determining how much time to devote to each question. Our typical format for an interview kept to the following narrative structure. 1. Identification of two leaders, one who stifled intelligence and the other who amplified it. 2. Identification of an experience or story working with each leader. 3. Context for working with diminisher, experience, setting. 4. Impact on nominator, percentage of nominator's capability used. 5. Impact on group, role played in group process, perception in broader organization. 6. Leader's actions, what was done or not done to impact others. 7. Result of actions, outcomes, deliverables accomplished. 8. Repeat questions 3 through 7 for the nominated multiplier. Structured interviews, follow-up. We conducted a second round of interviews to gather more information about the strongest multipliers. This included A. interviewers with the multipliers themselves, B. second interviews with the nominators to gather greater detail and understanding, and C. an in-depth 360-degree process interviewing both former and current members of the multipliers management team. Industry expansion. As we extended our research to eventually include 144 different leaders, we found more examples within our original target companies, added more companies within the technology and biotech industries, and went beyond these industries entirely to include others in the for-profit sector as well as nonprofits and government agencies. Our research journey took us across four continents and introduced us to a rich and diverse set of leaders. See Appendix C on the enhanced portion of this audiobook. The following is a list of organizations where we studied multipliers. In order to provide confidentiality, we are not publishing the list of companies where we studied diminishers. Hexal, Affymetrics, Biotech. Bloom Energy, Better Place, Green Tech. Stanford University, Vital Smarts, Education. DreamWorks Studios, Entertainment. White House, Israeli Army, Government. GM Daewoo, Flextronics, Manufacturing. Boys and Girls Club of the Peninsular, Green Belt Movement, Benyon Center, Unitas, Nonprofit. Advent International, Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield & Byers, Private Equity and Venture Capitalists. Bain & Company, McKinsey & Company, Professional Services. Gap, Land's End, Gymboree, Retailing. Highland High School Rugby, North Carolina State University Women's Basketball Program, Sports. Amazon, Apple, Cisco, Infosys Technologies, Hewlett-Packard, Intel, Intuit, Microsoft, SAP, Salesforce.com, Technology Industry. Self-Employed Women's Association, Workers' Union. Phase 3, The Model. We gathered approximately 400 pages of interview transcripts, read them multiple times, and collated them for cross-interview analysis. We then took this theme analysis and calibrated it against the quantitative data we had gathered from the leadership survey. Finally, we adhered to a disciplined and rigorous debate methodology for crafting each of the disciplines that eventually became chapters for the book. Both Greg and I claim to have been severely beaten up by each other during this debate process. We hope the research is stronger for it. Appendix B. Frequently Asked Questions. Are people either diminishers or multipliers, or are there people in the middle? We see the diminisher-multiplier model as a continuum, with a few people at the extremes and most of us somewhere in between. As people have been introduced to this material, they almost always see some of the diminisher and some of the multiplier within themselves. One leader we've worked with is illustrative. He was a smart and aware individual who didn't fit the archetype of a diminisher, and yet, when he read the material, he could see how he sometimes behaved in a diminishing manner. While we studied this leadership phenomenon as a contrast, we see the model as a continuum, with only a very few people at the polar extremes, and the majority of us somewhere in the middle. Can everyone become a multiplier, or are there some people who are too much of a diminisher to change? Anyone who can see their diminisher behavior can change. Anyone can be a multiplier if they're willing to shift their center of weight and look beyond themselves. There may be a few people who are so staunchly invested in their diminisher approach to leadership that they won't be able to change, but we think of them as outliers. In our work, teaching and coaching, we have seen people make significant changes. For example, one leader we worked with had some strong diminisher tendencies. He worked hard to adopt a more multiplier approach to his leadership. People noticed the difference. Then, after he took a larger role at another company, he was able to start with a clean slate and a new approach. He is now seen as a multiplier and has even introduced these ideas to the people in his organization. We aren't under the delusion that every diminisher will change, but we believe that the vast majority can make the shift. It begins with awareness and intent. Should companies fire their diminishers? Smart companies don't have to fire every diminisher, but they should remove them from key leadership roles. If someone insists on being a diminisher, they may need to be isolated or contained, where they can't do great damage. If they are removed from key leadership roles, other people's capability gets released, and the diminishers are less likely to inspire managers underneath them to adopt diminishing leadership practices. This is easier said than done. Diminishers are, by definition, smart and intimidating. The course of least resistance is to keep them in their leadership roles. But once you start to calculate the high cost of diminishers in your organization, you will be better prepared to take action. For example, if you had a machine that was a bottleneck, causing the rest of your production line to operate at 50% capacity, you would see immediately how expensive that machine was to your operation. If you replaced that one machine, you could double the capacity and throughput of your entire production line. That is what is at stake with every diminisher you have in a key leadership role. Even if they are operating at full capacity, they operate as a bottleneck to everyone else around them. So, while the answer may not be to fire every diminisher, we suggest that it's just too expensive to leave them in key leadership roles. Are there times when diminisher leadership is called for? Yes, there probably are times when the diminisher approach is justified, but they are few and far between. If you can honestly say that you can afford for your people to operate at 50% of their capacity, that there is an impending crisis, that your insight is genuinely and significantly greater than the people around you, and that there is no reasonable chance that others could get up to speed quickly enough, then the diminisher approach may be the right approach. By parallel, if your child is running into the street, any number of diminisher practices are reasonable and advisable. In allowing for this, we would still emphasize that most situations, even extreme ones, can be viewed through either a diminisher or multiplier lens. Situations people often think call for a diminisher approach can be exactly the time to call upon the full intellectual horsepower of the people around you. When the stakes are high, when the challenges are complex and nonlinear, that may be just the time when the multiplier approach is most relevant. There are times when every leader may, in good conscience, operate as a diminisher. We advise keeping those moments to a minimum. These can and should be extreme exceptions to the rule. When you say multipliers get 2 times more from their people, that seems like a really big claim. Is it really that much? Yes, The number seemed high to us at first, but for several reasons we believe the ratio is correct. First, we ask the nominators to contrast multipliers to diminishers, rather than contrasting multipliers to an average manager. The 2x effect assumes a best-to-worst comparison. Second, we repeated this question to people across industry, function, and management level, and have confirmation that this ratio holds true as an average. Third, the surprisingly high difference may be the result of discretionary effort. As managers, we could observe whether someone is working at, above, or below their usual productivity level. What is harder to know is how much a person is holding back. The way people answer this question suggests that people believe they hold back a considerable amount around certain managers. We have concluded that while it is an amazing difference, multipliers really do get, on average, 2x more than their diminisher counterparts. Isn't this just enlightened leadership with a new name? The multiplier model is more than just enlightened leadership. Sure, it is enlightened in that it benefits the people who work around multipliers and get to work at their highest point of contribution and thrive, but the multiplier model is also a practical approach to management because multipliers get more from the people they lead, much more. They get more intelligent action, more adroit problem solving, and more concentrated effort. While that might seem enlightened, it is also just a practical and productive way to lead. Are multipliers more successful than diminishers? Yes, they are more successful at getting more out of people. This was amazingly consistent throughout our research. Even high-powered executives, icons in their own right, who hammered their people, simply could not get as much out of people as their multiplier counterparts. We didn't study the career trajectories of diminishers and multipliers themselves, but we did study the success of the people they worked around. We found that people and their careers thrived and became more successful around multipliers than around diminishers. How do these dynamics change across cultures? The international research we have done thus far confirms that this model is relevant and recognizable across continents and cultures. There is more research that could be done to verify this and to look for the subtle differences. We do find that some national cultures have inherent diminisher tendencies and a management legacy built on diminisher assumptions and practices. But in the original research and the subsequent teaching of this material, we have found almost universal resonance. There are some leaders you mention whom you have identified as multipliers, but who are sometimes known to diminish the people they work with. How do you explain the contradiction? Yes, this was interesting to us too. Even in our original data pool, we occasionally found that some leaders were named as both a diminisher and a multiplier by different people. On closer inspection, we found this to be a paradox rather than a contradiction. As just one illustration, we found that some leaders had figured out how to involve their direct reports, but hadn't learned to scale their leadership to the broader organization. The farther removed people were from the leader, the more diminished they felt. It was a classic case of accidental diminishing. It appears that being a multiplier to everyone takes deliberate intention and effort. A leader needs to think consciously of the people at the periphery of the organization in order to be a multiplier to them. Did you answer the question you set out to? Yes, but it has raised other questions. Along the way, as any good researcher should, we have found ourselves asking new and related questions. One question is, how can you create a multiplier culture in an organization, business, hospital, school? We studied leaders who have already created such a climate, but what if someone is starting from scratch? We have some experience with this, but we hope with further work and study to be able to answer it with more rigor. A second question this research has raised is, why are some people never diminished? This is fascinating to us. Some people showed up in our research as being relatively immune to diminishers. They appear to be able to turn any situation into one they can learn from and thrive in. They appear somewhat invincible or unbreakable. We think this might deserve a more serious examination. We have answered our original question to our own satisfaction, but we have found that it has raised new questions for us. We are eager to dig into these new questions. Do you have to introduce these ideas at the top of an organization? It is easiest to drive wide-scale change by starting at the top. However, you can still begin within your own team. If the CEO is on board, that is to your advantage, but it isn't necessary. You can begin where you are, make your team a success story, and build momentum from there. In every organization we studied, we found leaders who created multiplier cultures, even without top-level support, and often in diminishing cultures. We recently worked with a team who had spent several years being diminished by their CEO. But as they became aware of their own management choices, they realized they could start where they were. They could make multiplier choices. If you can get executive sponsorship, it will be to your advantage. But you can start with your own team, learn what works, and then involve other people from the broader organization. Should I even try to hand this book to a raging diminisher? Yes, drop it and run. Or perhaps you can send it from one of your other diminisher colleagues. More seriously, if you share the book from a diminisher's perspective by judging and dictating, you are likely to close down the person and continue the diminishing cycle. However, if you approach it as a multiplier and make it safe for someone to learn new ideas, you might find surprising levels of receptiveness and impact. Here are two multiplier strategies. 1. Focus on your own experience. You might begin by acknowledging how each of us can be an accidental diminisher at times and say something like, "This book has shown me how I sometimes diminish people without meaning to." Or you can focus on the impact it has had for you and introduce it with, "I've been working on being more of a multiplier, and I'm seeing how it is increasing performance on my team. I thought you might be interested too." 2. Focus on the upside to the organization. Most managers would be interested in doubling the capacity of their organization. You could introduce the ideas with, "I think we have more intelligence in our organization than we've been able to tap into. I think there are some things that we could do as a leadership team to raise the IQ level of our organization." 3. Additionally, you could introduce the ideas indirectly by holding a brown bag lunch discussion or by sharing a single idea or multiplier practice. We believe that there is a way to share this material with almost anyone, but you are more likely to succeed if you approach it like a multiplier. You can't diminish people into being multipliers. If I could do one thing to get on the path of multiplier, what should it be? The one thing we would suggest you do is to ask really insightful and interesting questions that make people think. This is a practical step, and it applies across all of the disciplines. For example, whether you are trying to become a liberator or a challenger or a debate maker, asking insightful and interesting questions will get you started down the correct path. So, if you are looking to build one skill, start with questions. If you want to work on one assumption, we would suggest trying on, "People are smart and will figure it out." One way to do this is ask the question, "How is this person smart?" Asking that question can interrupt any tendencies to judge people in a binary fashion. It can work like a fast pass into the technicolor world where multipliers live. This recording of Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter, by Liz Weissman with Greg McEwen, was read by John Maher. Chapter 1 was read by Liz Weissman. The chapter headings were read by Greg McEwen. Copyright 2010 by Elizabeth Weissman. Production copyright 2011 by HarperCollins Publishers. We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio. For more information about the broad range of titles from Harper Audio, Harper Children's Audio, and Cadman, please visit our website at www.harperaudio.com. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.